Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic.
All right, so good evening to this very special topic of Jung's views on the East and the West and the psychology and what the differences are, why there are differences. The first thing I want to start with is the general direction of Jung, what Jung was really interested in. And this sometimes causes a little bit of confusion because Jung was really interested in the psyche, how the psyche works, how it's built, how the psyche develops. For this, he was looking in all those different products of the psyche that we have, which can be dreams, can be visions, hallucinations, mental problems, but also fairy tales, mythology, religion, spirituality. So when people talk about stuff, Jung was listening. And it does not really matter to him who would say something. And you can see this in his life's work. He started as a psychiatrist with a psychoanalytic background, and his scope got bigger, bigger, and bigger. So in the beginning, he's the therapist, and he deals with the individual problems of people. And this scope expanded when he coined the term of the collective unconscious, saying, oh, this is even broader and wider than we anticipated the psyche. It goes deeper than the individual. It goes down into all human beings. This goes then up to the point where he spends a lot of time with religion and spirituality, with many people thinking about that he's talking about these things specifically. But rather, he uses these things to understand how the psyche is. And for example, what the difference in people is. When you look into the psychology of personality, called differential psychology, meaning the difference between people. Because only when you have differences, you have actual points. Because in the same points where we're all the same, we don't need to talk about it. We need to talk about the differences, as they make us different. So what I have to say is that, of course, Jung's views are old because Jung lived from 1875 till 1961. So many things he has written about, they are now almost 100 years old. So the world back then was a lot different. So when he talks about the West or the East, he doesn't necessarily talk about it in the sense that we have today, because the world changed a lot, especially in the East. So that's a disclaimer from the beginning, that this is his views on the topics that were back then. And Jung was very much looking at the past always. So when we look into the psyche and we think about how the psyche develops in an individual human being, we can see it in a child, as a child is just a bundle of instincts and drives, and it's acting, and there's no control, there's no will really. There are things inside the child that want something. There's hunger inside the child, there's playfulness inside the child, and there's no coherent personality or goal-oriented action. So the child, in the Jungian sense, is completely unconscious, is driven by unconscious forces. And with time, there crystallizes something in the psyche of the child, which Jung calls consciousness. Consciousness meaning being aware and being able to willfully do things and to steer thoughts and actions towards a goal, to do things and not do things. For him, this is something that is special about human beings, that they're able to develop this consciousness, not only to have it, but also to develop it. And as a child grows up, ideally, consciousness becomes stronger and stronger, and the child is able to work in the family, work in the group, and then in society, and learn something, expand consciousness, and become more and more sophisticated in the actions. It's a huge difference if it's your first day at the job or you've been doing this job for 20 years. You've picked up all the knowledge, all the skill, all the routines and habits that make one effective in one's work. And this is a development of consciousness. With consciousness having one downside for Jung, it picks out a part of reality, focuses on that. Because if you want to do something, and you want to do it clearly, you have to ignore everything else in the world. When you're driving a car, you're thinking about basically only driving the car And if you're very proficient, you can also think about other things. But the more demanding the task is, the more you have to narrow down your focus. And he said, because consciousness is this malleable thing, it can also be formed to do only one specific task very well. And this becomes then an exclusion of the other parts of the psyche. And because people are supposed to be complete human beings, the other parts are pushing against consciousness to remind it, hey, you're a complete human being with a complete psyche. You can't only live in one way. You cannot only be thinking or only feeling or only be extroverted or only be introverted. You have to be all those things, and you have to be proficient in all those things. This, for Jung, does not only happen on an individual basis. It happens also on a societal level. So he's saying in the past, human beings, just as a species, were unconscious. In the similar sense as animals are supposedly unconscious. So consciousness is a product that came out of the human psyche by itself, a little bit like a miracle. And for Jung, the start of human consciousness is the start of writing. Being able to reflect, to externalize, and to formulate something, for him, is the beginning of consciousness and that part of culture where a lot of other things regarding our civilization grew out of. And for him, he calls it primitive, the primitive state of being, not being a value judgment, just being the word he uses. So I want to use it. Another term to think about it would be pre-scientific or superstitious, because a lot of things that are unique for primitives or primitive societies for Jung stem out of the fact that there's very weak consciousness. There's not so much willpower. It's difficult to concentrate long time on something. Also, how the psyche is spread out all over the world, even by saying, if you're unconscious about things, there's this effect called projection. That means instead of seeing that things belong to yourself, you see them outside in the outside world. And you think what's happening outside is something completely removed from you, but your perception is part of you. So he calls that projection, and that can happen in that there are things outside that are part of your psychology and they're projected on top of the real world. But that's hard to see. Example, if you look, for example, for the ancient Greeks, they have the gods, and the gods correspond very well with emotions, what we'd call today emotions. They say, okay, yeah, we have emotions inside. They attribute to gods that influence the people. If you read, for example, the Iliad, it's a lot of like, oh, this god gave me this idea, and this god gave me these actions and the strength to do those things. So psychic forces that are inside the people are being attributed to outside forces. This also means that, like, knowledge is not being thought about, and revelations come as insight from above. They just appear. It's not the product of a thought process that people are aware of. It's just, it's popping in the head of people. And consciousness developed, similar as the consciousness of a child develops for society, by having basically institutions, educational programs, laws, taboos, rules, that are forcing people to pay attention, to train this muscle, and to be more proficient. He even attributes the existence of taboos with people then actively have to use their mind to not do something. And this is always a tool of creating civilization. So while you have in the beginning this polytheistic view, it then changes more to a monotheistic view. This is the way of the, let's say, collective psyche of a society developing through, then again, different stages. So what many people do not know and are not aware about when we talk about the individual psyche in the Jungian sense, there's always consciousness and then the unconscious, where you have the personal unconscious, and then comes the collective unconscious. And this is also the most time how I explain it. But between the personal unconscious and the collective unconscious, there are additional layers. And this is groups spreading out. So under your personal unconscious comes the unconscious of your family. Like, your family has a psychology, and your family has complexes and neuroses that you can inherit. Like, some people get a house, other people get a complex. And after that, you have a societal psychology unconscious, and then even a cultural unconscious. And all these different layers they operate different because they're formed under different circumstances and they have different needs. And I will come back to this in the very end, but this is to already steer you in the right direction. So what does it tell us about the West? Because Jung really talked a lot about the West, because he experienced a lot of things in the West since he lived through the First World War and the Second World War. So we cannot really talk about the West without speaking about Christianity. This is as there's been the dominant mode in the West for almost 2,000 years. So Jung says it's special about the West is that you have these primitive societies, pre-scientific societies like the Romans, right? Or the Germans and the Egyptians and so on. As they have their polytheistic gods, they have their superstitions, like dream reading is still of importance and has an influence. You have revealed knowledge. This was the time when also new religions popped up. And with Christianity, this changed a lot because the focus of the world changed. Like when you looked at the Roman people, they were incredibly achievement-oriented, aggressive, expanding people who cared mostly about achievement and goals. And slavery was a big topic. Like 90% of the people in Rome at one point were slaves and only the other people were Romans. So it wasn't very much in-group, out-group way of thinking, out of which Christianity grew as a counter-impulse. Because Christianity is not really goal-oriented on an individual basis. It's not about getting rich, getting land, and all these other things. It's a spiritual movement. It's rather a denying of the materialistic view of the world and trying to find the kingdom of God, but rather within. This is why the Jewish people did not like Jesus, because they waited for the Messiah to get their own kingdom. And then came Jesus and said, the kingdom of God is within you. And they said, yeah, but we really want a real kingdom here. So what this means, this set the West on a track for a rather spiritual movement that grew out of a specific situation, especially the Roman Empire, as a contrast to that, because it was how Nietzsche would call it, the slave mentality. It was a mentality of those who had no place in society, which then told people, okay, everyone is important. Not only Romans are important. Like in ancient Egypt, only the Pharaoh was important, and Rome, the Romans was important. Christianity came and said, everybody is important. This grew out of specific circumstances, but was carried out then, ironically, by the Roman Empire into the rest of Europe, especially the Germanic tribes. In a weird twist of history, the Christians were pursued aggressively by the Romans. And like 200 years later, after killing Jesus, the Roman emperor said, okay, yeah, by the way, I'm Christian. Everybody else should be. It reminds me a little bit of the scene in Star Wars when you have Obi-Wan Kenobi, the wise old man, fighting against Darth Vader, the first Star Wars movie. And Obi-Wan Kenobi says, okay, you can kill me, but I will become more powerful than you can think of. And of course, Darth Vader kills him. And to think further than, oh yeah, 200 years later, the Empire, by the way, says everybody should be a Jedi and Obi-Wan Kenobi is the greatest guy in the world. So it's a completely switch in a short period of time, which changes the Roman psychology and pushes Christianity into the areas of Europe, which is Northern Europe mainly. Why do I say that? This has a problem way down the line, hundreds and thousands of years later, because for Jung, he sees there already a critical condition for the West, because Christianity was forced on the primitives. The primitives, they had a religion, and this religion got subdued, and it was a pagan religion. It got subdued, and they were not supposed to pay attention to that, and all these things were burnt and put away because their psychology was outside and the gods were outside in a stone, in a river, in a house, whatever. These are things that can be destroyed very easily. And this can also destroy then this pagan religion. So you have still people with completely pagan roots, with something being put on top, which is Christianity, which not grew out of that soil. It's just being put on top. And this leads to this notion of saying, oh yeah, you have to believe. You have to bring yourself to believe. This is a conscious notion. You have to bring yourself to convince yourself to believe something. It's not growing naturally out of the psyche of the people, but rather it's something that's coming on top down. And this causes a rift. And this rift played out over hundreds of years to the point where Protestantism came along with a point where people could finally read the Bible themselves. They were not dependent on the church anymore. And of course, everybody started to interpret the Bible by themselves, creating 500 denominations of Protestant Christianity. There's only one Catholic church, and they have the upper hand. It's only, you can only understand Christianity and the world through what the priests are saying, what the Pope is saying, and there's no individual revelation. You can't have really have dreams. God should not speak to you because the church will search for you and trying to kill you, and maybe after 100 years tell, yeah, actually he was a saint and it was the voice of God, but that's what a martyr is. And this is then already a splitting with Protestantism, as it puts more and more focus on the individual. It's up to the point where everybody is their own church. Like, the groups get smaller and smaller. Jung says, for the Catholic people, they can put their psychological needs into the church and everything is fine. But the Protestants, they're alone with their psychology, don't have the pagan roots anymore to find their psychology outside, interact with it, and they cannot find it in the church. So more problems ensue, and we saw it with a 30-year war and the slow death of God and this metaphysical underpinning of the West, which is like a layer of civilization which was pretty thin. And for Jung, he saw it pretty much in the First World War and the Second World War especially, that suddenly all those pagan things came out again, because National Socialism for him was a pagan movement. Suddenly all those ancient ideas and forces came out, and there was no really protection against it in the sense of, let's say, a spiritual institution. He says a religion is a safety mechanism for the psychic unconscious forces to channel them in the correct ways, to also inform people about them. So symbols, dogmas, rituals, all these things are important for psychic health. But these things declined because 2,000 years before, the Romans came and just put it on top of the pagan people, especially the Germans, who started the First World War, started the Second World War, and introduced a lot of other interesting ideas into the world, such as communism. So this puts the West in a very weird position, as it is different layers that are not really connected to each other that are forcefully put there. Let's put it like that. Of course, Christianity, very important. Even Nietzsche, who was, let's say, completely against Christianity, as he called it, the slave mentality, had created the possibility that there, let's say, it's an operating system installed of a huge amount of people, where you can say, this is the way how to see the world. Because everything was the devil. Everything pagan was the devil. Everything individual was the devil. But you had one way of looking into the world and train the mind and focus the mind and develop consciousness. And this is a very hard and difficult way to do. It's the same thing as when you have a small child and it has to learn to sit down at school for 8 hours. It's agony. And it takes a long time to get to the point where it all comes automatically. So what happened to all the gods? The gods were far outside. They were on the stone and the tree and the river. And they could be experienced that way. Then they got bundled into one god. And this god was an ethereal and, let's say, a frightful god, the god of the Old Testament. And with time, this god came down and became a human being, which was Jesus. And then, of course, this devolved in Protestantism to other people. Now everybody is kind of god, but there's not much to find, which is, let's say, outside of the people. There's not any outside point of reference anymore. This will be an important point when we talk about these. So having this, let's say, established way of consciousness, which is still limited because it's still something that is formed and still focused on certain things very much, there are some drawbacks to the Western set of mind, according to Jung. He says the Western mind is very focused on surface things and on words and on actions. So it is not there really investigating the meaning, because the meaning is not that experience, because it was also suppressed for a very long time to create something as consciousness, because you have to take away things to actually have something. It is a rather cold, disconnected rationality. And he saw that really in the world wars. He saw the world without planes and not people not being able to fly and dreaming of flying, inventing flying. And the first thing what they do is bomb cities. And he said, that's modernity. That, this is the rational mind wreaking havoc. And consciousness is always something limited. It is not complete. It should strive towards completion. It's pushed towards completion. But it's always an intermediate step that is limited. So he says, because consciousness, just like for a child or for pre-scientific society, is something very feeble, unstable, a lot of things has to be repressed, especially the unconscious, not to make things too complicated, and also the instincts. So his view was that in a Western mind, instincts are used mainly to fuel consciousness, right? And if you look at, for example, for monks and similar things, it's the denial of certain instinctual forces in hope to foster more consciousness and being then closer to God by ignoring a lot of other things and depriving oneself of that. So it is striving to more willpower, to establish more consciousness, but in the same time, of course, becoming more restrictive because less things are taken into consideration that should be taken into consideration. This is the West. And in contrast, there's the East. And when Jung talks about the East, he mainly talks about the Indian philosophy and Chinese philosophy. Especially Chinese had a big influence on him when he got interested in alchemy. So there was one book that completely changed his life, and that's an alchemical treaty from China called The Secret of the Golden Flower, where he noticed, oh, alchemy is really interesting, and he dedicated his life till he died investigating alchemy. But he also spent a lot of time with Indian philosophy, like Kundalini Yoga and all the different ideas in there. I have to say, I'm not so well versed in Eastern concepts, so I will not use them too much because very likely I will use them incorrectly since I also had a hard time to understand and remember them. It's the same, just growing up in a certain cultural context makes it easier to then later work on top on other things than on things where the foundation is missing. He traveled there himself also, and this was a very specific time and place in Europe when Jung was alive, because there was a huge influence suddenly from the East, because all those texts, like the alchemical treaty from China, got translated into languages that Europeans could read. So it already started with Schopenhauer, that a lot of ideas from the East would come to the West, but like the floodgates opened around when Jung was alive and Jung was working, because everything got translated. You had the means of transportation to quickly get there. So this let the world grow closer together. And Jung traveled to India and talked to the people there. Interestingly enough, he did not talk to the clergy. He did not want to talk to them. He wanted to talk more to the common people to understand them, because he had the feeling that the clergy might be too institutionalized. He wanted to see more the everyday man and how they lived out their psychology, basically. And what he noted about the East, and let's stay with India, is that you have an uninterrupted culture that built on top of each other. That means in India, really, you have these 5,000 years of uninterrupted cultural thoughts and elaborations on the ideas. And exploring the psyche is very, very difficult, because people have to live through it, they have to codify it, and they have to spread it, and then it has also to be understood. He said this process, of course, also exists in the West, but the West is separated strongly through the Roman Empire. But there you have still the same gods, and you have the elaborations building on top of each other. It's a huge difference if you talk about something 5,000 years or 2,000 years. So he saw a greater understanding of psychological processes, a more codified way, and a more, further exploration and representation of the complexity of the psyche. He saw that there are certain ideas that show for a bigger psychological understanding, for example, the self. That's a concept where he took the name from Eastern psychology, because it's easier to find there than in the West. And the self means the totality of the psyche, of the conscious and unconscious components that show a harmony of all the conflicting things. He says the psyche itself is something conflicting, and forces are constantly in contact with each other and in conflict with each other. And the West would rather try to separate that and say, okay, I have only one part of the psyche, that's correct, and I only spend time with that. In the East, the awareness is there that all the parts are necessary. And the self symbolizes this as the self combines all the opposites, and in that sense, creates a higher state of consciousness. He also saw that there was a more living out of the instincts, while in the West, the instincts are repressed to create consciousness and to maintain consciousness. He saw that people were more in tune with instincts and, let's say, archetypal forces. As they had the terminology and the rituals and the institutions to actually facilitate them and manifest them in a positive manner, because an archetype just coming up is very archaic. It needs to be taken care of in a ritual, for example, or in a tradition that brings out the positive things. And I have an example for that. So many years ago, I read the biography of Steve Jobs from Walter Isaac. It's a very interesting book because it was an incredibly driven person, obsessed with simplicity. And there was a time when he went to India, and that had a huge influence for him. The big influence on him was that he had the feeling that people were living very intuitive. They were in tune with their surrounding, and there was not so much doubt. They were just living. They're living their life in an intuitive way. And he wanted to bring this intuitive way also to the West. And he wanted to do that through products that he would sell, but that's just the Western style. And I think this is comparable to what Jung said when he said in the East, for example, in India, it was more seeable that they work in their instincts. For him, Eastern philosophy and the whole metaphysical realm that exists there is psychology, and it's an elaboration of psychology. The same as he sees that every product of the psyche tells something about itself. And what his goal was to explore all these products of the psyche to understand the psyche better. So what he saw, for example, for Kundalini Yoga, it would completely map onto his ideas on individuation. But this is journey, which I described, of from unconsciousness to consciousness to integrating all the forces and the final result in the self. This is individuation. And he saw, just as a culture, being better set up in the East to go this whole way. So it's an interesting when you think about it, because in the West, it's very much ends with the death of Jesus, who was 34. And this is like the logical endpoint for the West. Like, we are obsessed with youth, we are obsessed with the early life. And as soon as people hit a certain point, like, there's nothing for them really there. And he noticed this in his practice, that he said people after their midpoint in life have pretty specific psychological needs, and there are no really institutions or schools for adults, let's say. And we educate children, teenagers, young adults, so that they can get to work, they can marry and buy things on the market, and then it's done. There's nothing else there. So, and even Jesus died at that time, so it's like there's not really a role model in the West. But he said in the East, it's way more clear what the whole life is supposed to be like. And he met Kundalini Yoga on the chakras, and the chakras really saw in different parts of the body where the mind is situated. I guess you would say, for primitive, pre-scientific people, the seat of consciousness and the mind is in the belly, because the belly speaks. You get hungry, but also when you have a bad feeling, you feel it in your stomach. So when he would talk to primitive people, for example, in Africa or somewhere else, they would say they're thinking with their stomach. Right. And when he would go somewhere else, they would also complain about the Europeans, about the white people, that they would say they are thinking with their heads, which is kind of stupid. That's also not where the mind is. So this Kundalini Yoga, this moving through the different chakras, having different places in the body where the mind resides, or what the focus, let's say, resides of the current state of being. This is mapped also onto this developmental time of groups and individuals. So that was the East and the West. And the next thing is, of course, how do they relate to each other? And for Jung, they relate to each other in a very, very interesting way. Because Jung has a concept, he calls it shadow. And he says, you have consciousness, which is very often light, and everything which is not consciousness is very much shadow. It's in the dark. So a shadow is always a relative thing. It's relative to the light. It's not an absolute thing, but rather when you shift the light, the shadow also moves, but it's always there. It's the opposite. It's everything you did not take into account and you did not take care of. As soon as consciousness focuses on one thing, all the other things move into the shadow. And what he sees is this really shadow opposite relationship between the East and the West. So for him, the East is the shadow of the West, but also the other way around. So this is a really interesting part. So for the East, for him, is the West, the shadow part. So what we have in our conscious being and how we behave below all the things we're not taking care of, they're very similar to the East, he says, for example, Chinese. So in our unconscious, we are very close in the dark parts to how the Chinese metaphysical model and philosophy works. But he says on the flip side, in the Chinese or the Indians, in the unconscious, there is likely some Western understanding of the psyche and of the mind taking place. And he has a lot of examples for this opposite relationship. And the number one thing he says has to do with causality, which is the mode of operation in the West, and synchronicity, which is a concept which is really hard to get for Westerners. I know because I tried and I always try to explain it. Causality is easy. It's A causes B, causes C, causes D. You have a temporal, logical flow of events, and one thing causes the other. Synchronicity is a causal relationship between things. Things have a meaning because they happen at the same time. They do not have a logical connection. This is obvious through causality. This means a lot of these, let's say, foretelling techniques that people might know have to do with the fact that something in a moment is off the moment. There's this Chinese foretelling technique called the I Ching, where you have a lot of sticks and you just take them as a bundle like this, put them on the table and let them go. And they fall, of course, to each other, we would say randomly. But there exists a book to it, which is kind of the manual, where you look through and you try to find the pattern which looks similar to the pattern that you have on your table. And this will tell you something of this moment. Because it happened in this moment, there's something maybe happening on the other side of the world, which is kind of influencing this thing. So this, the sticks lying to each other in that relationship relates to everything else happening in the world right now. And this is synchronicity. It's hard then to draw a conclusion. We have a similar thing with tarot in the West, or like tea leaf reading and like the intestines of animals or something that was done in the past. It tells you something about the situation, like a unique insight, which is not causally logical. So for him, the Eastern mind sees more meaning. It sees more the bigger picture, how everything relates to each other. So when, or the, let's say an example for when a Westerner comes to the beach and sees there's a head lying on the beach, the question is, oh, how did it come here? And then the person sees, ah, there's a boat driving by here and there are people on there, they're having fun. Likely there came the wind and it put the head here on the beach. So then Western mind happy. There's a logical, oh, there was somebody on the boat, they had a hat, there comes the wind, it took the hat and put it on the beach, and now I found the hat here. So everything done, causally explained. But he said, for this synchronistic view and this Eastern way of looking at the world, it's how does it relate that there's a hat, right? There's a couple sitting over there further. There's a broken tree close. There are certain fish in the river. And how, for example, the stars or the sun are aligning, right? This has all tells you something about this unique, specific situation and time. And this, of course, is not really combinable. You can't combine causality with synchronicity. And this is a different way how the psychology works in his mind. Also, that the Western mind is very outward oriented, very materialistic oriented towards very specific things. While in the Eastern tradition, it's more inward. It's so inward that in India, there's also the idea that the world is actually dreamt up by a god. It's more like an illusion, the outside world. So it does not be taken too much into consideration because it's more a dream. It's not really real so much in the sense as a Westerner would take the world for real. But this creates also this enormous drive to go outside and take things. So he sees a psychological need in the West that people try to find outside what they can't find inside because they're so much oriented to the outside. So it's a restlessness that he knows when people come to, for example, Africa or South America and so on. And it's all the white people causing trouble and infecting people with their restlessness, as Jung said. It's also the idea of what is taking the supreme position. And this is then consciousness in the West. Like, okay, willpower, doing things, achieving things, being oriented toward things, always being productive, always working. While he said, in the East more, it's like also letting things happen, just waiting. And it can be seen in the different symbols of the self. Like Jesus is a symbol of the self in the West. But Jesus suffered tremendously, and he died under the most horrible circumstances that he even forgot his own existence. Like he even had doubt in God, even though he's a son of God and he is God, but the pain was just too much. In the East, the Buddha sits under a tree and becomes enlightened. Of course, after living a very interesting and important life. But this is a big difference between the West and the East. Like the individuation process for the West, it's dying on the cross. And in the East, it's sitting under the tree, and then it's going to be revealed. And then you are coming on this higher sphere of consciousness. So the Western mind, one-sided, focused on specific things. While he saw a more elaborate and more inclusive view in the East. And he notices even by the symbols. For example, we can see it here now on Zoom. Stefan, he took the completely correct symbol of yin and yang symbol, which symbolizes white and black. And even in each other, this symbol symbolizes two snakes that ring against each other. And those are the opposites. And the symbol already recognizes that black and white are not completely exclusive on each other, but rather in the black, there's also white. The white snake is also in the black snake, and also the other way around. So both are part of each other. It's an inclusive view. But in the West, it's only supposed to be one thing. So in stories in the West, then you have a dragon, you kill the dragon, you have to kill the dragon. Like St. George killed the dragon, Siegfried killed a dragon. Everybody has to kill the dragon because the dragon is evil and it's better when the dragon is dead. But when you, for example, look into China, the dragon is a good symbol. It's a positive symbol because it's also potential. Same as the unconscious. When consciousness is weak and does not know how to handle the unconscious, it's frightful. That's when people then dream of wild animals, for example. It's the instincts that just force themselves onto consciousness and break consciousness apart. So it's best to avoid them because consciousness can't deal with them. So it has to be separated just to have some small island of peace and quiet, right? While the storm is raging outside. But in the East, the dragon is a friendly thing. It's the potential. It's a thing you can build a relationship with. So in the West, the story is over when the dragon is killed. But in the East, it's different as it's got more integrated. It's not clearer what is good and bad, but all the things belong to each other. He notes that in the Indian pantheon of gods, it's not unusual to have the evil gods and the good gods sitting at the same table and living with each other. That's no problem. This is already recognizing there are opposites, but that does not mean that one side is bad, but rather all sides are necessary. While Western tradition, right? You have the devil and he should stay in hell, not get out. And when we see him, we should get them back to hell as quickly as possible. And this is how you can see it in stories and certain ideas and symbols, these states of minds. So he also notes just how, let's say, religion looks like. And there's a stark contrast. Like Christianity, a church is basically surrounded by a graveyard. Everything is dark and dead and not very joyful. Like religion is not a joyful thing. You have a cross and you're supposed to bear it just like Jesus. But in the East, it's colorful and more celebratory and more, let's say, hopeful because it is more integrated of all the things. It's not necessarily naive, but rather all the things are accounted for. So you don't have to be afraid of the things since they are taken care of, let's say, psychologically. And one other very interesting part that he talked about was in the West, we talk about you have to make something out of yourself. You have to choose a career. You have to do something. You can do everything you put your mind onto, which is a conscious statement, a willpower statement. You can be everything you want to. You only have to will it. Jung was more oriented towards, or let's say convinced by the Eastern notion of that you have some kind of fate or role to play in the grand scheme of things. So there's a life path there already for you. And the most truest thing and the most correct thing that you can do is follow those individual paths. And this path can also mean that you're a thief, right? This is the fate of your life, that you're a thief or a bad person. But being truest to yourself, and let's say to the universe and the rest of everything that exists, would be to fill this role out completely. And this is what Jung also means with the individuation process of going towards the self. It's living out one's individual life based on the circumstances what one have, which is one's psychology, which is always the starting point of everything. So we have the East, we have the West, and they are on opposite things about specific topics. One is of the shadow of the other. He said it's not possible really to substitute one for the other. He said it's always interesting to go outside in the far world and see what's there. That's way more interesting. And when something is in your unconscious, it's also your psyche screaming out that you should pay attention to it and spend more time with it. And he said what happens in the West, because basically the Western religion broke down, the whole symbols, rituals, traditions, and so on, are maybe still in the collective unconscious, but they are not conscious enough to play a big role. People started looking to the East and being fascinated by that, because, of course, it's in their shadow side, it's in the unconscious. But trying to take this as a Westerner, he said, it's not really possible. Because on the one side, you have these 1,000 years elaboration about certain things. And somebody who's not coming out of the tradition, trying to take it from there and integrate it in their own life, he said, very likely it will be misunderstood. And you will start focusing on the wrong things in your psyche, because you have psychological needs based on your individual psyche. But also, as I said before, you have a family psychology, you have a, let's say, state psychology, and a cultural psychology. And all those layers have specific needs that need to be taken care of and need their own solutions. It's like copying someone else's homework. It's like, yeah, you have now something, but the question is how much this will really help you. And he had this example of yoga. He said, the Western people, and this is a view from 100 years ago, I don't know how yoga is now practiced in the West now, and if you would approve of that, but he said, it's a complete Western way of thinking, operating, again, taking this thing and just, for example, going through the movements and doing every day for half an hour and doing 10 positions, 15 positions, and so on. Being, again, completely focused on surface things, completely focused on the action and conscious willpower doing things. He said the sense of yoga is rather to explore a meaning and to, you know, travels on psyche. And he said this introverted view is rather missing in the West. So this is not a helpful thing. And of course, there's all these shiny things and they seem to work in their context, but it's hard to take them out of their environment. It's just like taking an animal from a specific environment to another environment. It cannot flourish the same way. So he warns about that multiple times that Westerners should not do yoga. But he noticed that there's a specific reason why Westerners are interested in all these Eastern ideas, because there you have still a functioning proper system. And this is already intriguing. And this is missing in the West, in his eyes, which caused a lot of the atrocities of the 20th century, because all these archetypal unconscious forces came out and there was no healthy way to integrate them. So the dikes were too low and the flood came and flooded just everything and it's carnage and mayhem. He even fell a little bit into that spell. So he traveled a lot of India and into other parts of the world to experience this. And his unconscious told him that he might be doing something wrong. Because while he was in India, he had a dream about the Holy Grail drowning in the English Channel. And this dream had shook him up so much that he immediately returned back to Europe and said, okay, I'm spending a lot of my time with all these foreign cultures, while my own culture has a problem that needs to be taken care of. And he sees these developments that in the East took place thousands of years ago, also taking place in the West, but in a different way, because every cultural need is different. So for him, the reaction of Christianity and this extreme spirituality was alchemy, with having your psyche projected into the world, having individual, personal revelation about things and experience the psyche oneself again. he even calls alchemy the Western yoga, that this is the Western style, how to explore the psyche. Yoga was for the East, how to explore the psyche. But in the West, he said, it's alchemy, where these ideas then came up that then conform the culture in creating new symbols and new institutions. As Christianity was winding down, alchemy grew up. And interestingly enough, out of alchemy, we made science and have now all the amazing things that we have and all the problems, of course, too. This example that I've said before, that he sees Eastern philosophy as a way of psychology and actually psychology. We now have psychology as a science. So this is our exploration of the psyche, to get into there and to fill out the need, which was abandoned before, because before you had the church, it took care of the unconscious and psychology and everything was fine. But as soon as this fell by the wayside, people experienced their individual psychology again. And this is why now people are so interested in psychology, because they experience things that they normally would not experience, would there be a functioning system in place. So we are building a new system up again through psychological investigation, for example, because we cannot go into the past the same way as we can't just take the things from the East. We also cannot just take the things from our past and say, oh yeah, I'm just like a Christian again, or I'm just a pagan again. It does not work like this. So it has to be growing out of the unconscious and from below, and building something on top of that. So it cannot be this layering, I will force myself to believe something, I will force something on top of myself, but rather it has to grow out of myself this natural kind of way. So he is still hopeful for the West, and he says people dream of mandalas, and this is something individual, while in the East you have this whole systems about mandalas, and they are very elaborate. It's very that you have their complete tradition, and here people are trying to put it up themselves. It's not yet ready to be a temple, but it will develop like that. And the Western psyche, of course, will also develop. And it's not a race. It's not a competition. It's not about, oh, the Eastern mind is better, and so they won, for example. But rather, it's always this idea of you have certain psychological needs, and you have certain psychological necessities, and those have to be taken care of. And there are individual solutions necessary. It's the same as, for example, therapy or living one's life. There's not the solution for everyone. It's rather everybody has to find their own solution in a sense. So this is concluding what Jung thought about specialities about the psychology of the West and the East. And he has several books about it. There's one when people are interested about Kundalini Yoga, where he just talks about that and says, oh, this maps very nicely on individuation, because he says this is not completely unique. There's something always underlying, and this is our psyche. It's just expressing itself in different ways. It can be in an Eastern way, it can be in a Western way, it can be in a dream, it can be in a myth or in a hallucinations. All comes out of the psyche. And if you look close enough and you can compare enough, you can see, oh, there's not so much new under the sun. It might look different when you're on surface level, but deep down, it's then all connected and very much the psyche. So I want to thank you very much for your attention, and I hope you learned something.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. During an event, a discussion part follows after the presentation where all attendees discuss the just presented topic or other Jungian concepts. If you also want to join, find the group on meetup.com. The name of the group is CG Jung Help Desk. Also make sure to subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. See you next time.